This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to iFanboy.com, Pick of the Week podcast, episode 87, sponsored by Jim Hanley's Universe, ComicHole.com, and the Netflix. Welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. This will be the 87th episode. I am Josh, and I'm here with Ron.
Hey.
And Connor. And hello. I haven't done this in a while, so hopefully I do this better than Ron did last week. So here we go.
You're already starting off to a good...
I know, it's already rough.
Yeah.
At iFanboy.com, we are fans of the comic books because we like to read them. And so each week we'll read a whole lot of them. One of them will pick the best book that they did that week and write a review about it, which you can see on iFanboy.com. And then we will come here and talk about that book. Along with many others. And then going forward, you should know that we're going to talk about those books in some detail. So having not read them, you might find them spoiled, I think.
Possibly.
It's possible.
Probably.
So here's the warning to you. We're talking about the books that happened, and we're going to talk about them in the detail. So we got a whole lot of stuff to do. I think we're gonna switch it up a little bit this week and talk about some trades later, so stick around. And starting off, Ron graciously filled in for me, who actually had the pick, but then Ron said, don't worry. I know it's difficult. I got this for you. So what did you bring us?
Well, I didn't know we were going to go there. Okay, then. So last week Connor was enjoying the fact that it was a great week for comics, and it was another fantastic week for comics, at least in my point of view. I got like 15 books. So it didn't make the job of picking the pick easy. That's for sure. And honestly, there were a lot of things going into this week. There are a lot of books that I really, really enjoyed and I was really, really impressed by. And we'll get to them later on. But ultimately, at the end of the day, like we've always said, our pick of the week is the book that we enjoyed the most, for whatever reason, be it quality or be it nostalgia, or be it, you know, for whatever. And for me, it had to be X-Men number 200 this week. And it was a surprise. I surprised myself even that I picked it. It's the usual.
I shocked me.
I know. It was shocking.
What did I do?
It was the usual, 200th issue kind of extravaganza that Marvel typically normally does on these, you know, every 25 issues, it seems like. There's always something.
It's funny how you can say the usual 200th issue when really there should only be one 200th
Well, no,
issue.
I mean like the usual highlight issue, you know, yeah. The, you know, like the 175th issue, extravaganza.
It ends in a zero. Let's go.
But so this was a fat, fat issue. I don't even know how many pages it was. It might be 32. It might be 48. I don't actually know because they don't know. They don't print page numbers anymore. But and it was written by Mike Carey. And the pencils were by Chris Bacciolo and Humberto Ramos, which I thought was really interesting. And when I saw that on the credits, I was like, huh, how about that? And the
they were switching off arcs, weren't they?
Yeah, but the thing is that I don't know who's who. Like, right. I don't know what page was Bacciolo versus what page was Ramos. And I don't know if either of them – and the funny thing is about that is that, like, I love Ramos and I don't like Bacciolo. And so now it's really making me look at that and wonder if there's really any difference.
No, there's a big difference.
Yeah, no, and I'm sure people will write in and tell me, you know, oh, aren't you stupid? Didn't you realize that Bacciolo was doing pages 32 to 35 or whatever? But I don't care.
It's really interesting that like we're seeing this in this book and then in Captain America and like
Yeah.
Seems like a new thing.
Well, I could see why they would have two artists on this book because it was longer and because both Ramos and Bacciolo have been on this title over the past couple of months. Mm-hmm. But like the idea of two artists whose styles complement each other to the point where you don't know who's doing what page really could be the solution to the whole monthly conundrum problem, you know, artists, you know, like if Chris Bacciolo can't do a monthly book and you have him do, you know, 15 pages of a 22-page comic and somebody does seven, you know, the remaining seven, and the book comes out monthly, I'm okay with that. That's cool.
I would not like that.
Well, yeah, but you've got that on Captain America.
I'm not
thrilled about it, yeah.
Right, but I'm just saying, but you love Captain America, and so...
I don't know. I think I like the idea of the artistic integrity of, like, an arc with the artist and it's, like, because the more cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah,
like, it's exactly. Working for that, but it's very easily could not work for that.
Yeah, I mean,
you get a lot of what you happen in 52.
Well, yeah, exactly. And the problem being is that is finding artists that are complementary to each other. Like I said in Captain America, I was surprised that there was another artist. I thought it was just Epting. And in this way, I mean, I'm sure if I look really closely, I could probably guess and try to figure out who is who. But like the art flowed so well that it didn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, and ultimately, that's what I think is important.
Sure.
So that was on the art side, and the art was fantastic, by the way. The art was vibrant. It was energetic. It was great. And then on the writing side, Mike Carey, I've been giving him a bit of a hard time. I've been, you know, saying that I don't know if he's cut out for the superhero comics, especially the X-Men. I was afraid we had another Chuck Austin on our hands. But he kind of brought it with this issue, and what we had was this is kind of like the ending of the previous story arc and the now picking up of the latest story arc, and the key kind of plot points, the hinges and the spoilers, if you will, is that at the end of the last story arc, Cable's whole country that he built, Providence, was just destroyed.
And Rhode Island?
No, not Rhode Island. It's Providence Island in the Pacific Ocean.
P-Town destroyed!
The Rogues X-Men team with Mystique and Iceman and stuff like that fought a villain called Hecatomb. Don't ask me.
Sounds like a bodily function.
And it's a villain that had absorbed people as it, you know, kills things. And so the way they defeated it was Rogue absorbed it. And so she touched it and she absorbed all 8 billion souls and 8 billion minds that this villain has grabbed over the years. So this picks up right after that battle and them going back to Mystique's house in the country. By the country, I mean the South. I apologize to you country people in the South by referring to your land as the country. But they go to I believe, Georgia, where Mystique and – oh, no, Mississippi, I'm sorry, in Caldecott County. They go to Mystique's old house to kind of bring Rogue, and then they call in the Cyclops, Emma Frost, Wolverine, Beast team to come help Rogue because she's in trouble because she's got 8 billion minds in her and she's losing her identity and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of one of those X-Men kind of things where there's like the strong gathering, a lot of characters at once. And then on a side plot, you've got Cable dealing with the aftermath of the Hecatomb thing, and all of a sudden Gambit and Sunfire show up. And we last saw Gambit and Sunfire when, after the whole Apocalypse debacle, when they turned Gambit into one of the Horsemen, and now Gambit seemingly is back to normal, and he refers to the fact that he's back to normal but doesn't explain how or why. And then at the end of the issue, the big twist is that the Marauders attack the X-Men in Mississippi. And the Marauders were a team that was a villainous team formed by Mr. Sinister back in the early Uncanny X-Men 200s. And that was the team that had Scalp Hunter and Sabretooth was originally part of it.
I feel like Gordon in that sketch.
Anyway, and the big twist was is that apparently Mystique is leading them, and the issue ends with Mystique shooting Rogue, which is kind of a big deal because she's her adopted daughter and all that whole kind of deal. So anyway, but there was a lot of action, and it really kind of, you know, like it was just a ball to read. And then on top of that, you had the first section of the Endangered Species crossover, which we talked about last week. And so it was a short, you know, I think like 6 or 8 page, 8 page backup story in the back, and it had to do with the Beast giving the overview of what happened with Scarlet Witch and M-Day, and he's kind of giving a narrative as what he's been trying to do in order to solving the mutants being, you know, not existing anymore. And he's basically explaining that he's met with Reed Richards, he's met with Tony Stark, he's met with Hank Pym, he's met with all the great minds, and they've come up empty. And he says, so now I'm kind of desperate, so I'm turning to you. And it ends on the last page, and he's looking at a bunch of video screens, and it's like Dr. Doom, Mr. Sinister, the High Evolutionary, MODOK.
That's a difficult, like, conference call to put together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the one thing. I was like, how does he have their numbers? Like,
So does 1 o'clock work for everyone?
I know. Can you imagine that? Seriously. It's like, how do you get them all on the phone at the same time? What's this video?
Luckily, they also got the video conferencing software.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny because in the history of superheroes and sci-fi, video conferencing with supervillains has been around a long time.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in the corporate world, not so long.
In the corporate world, not so easy. Trust me, I've tried.
You know, one of the things about being an art supervillain is you really actually have a lot of free time.
And you're also on the cutting edge of video conferencing technology.
Yeah. Well, yeah. The other thing is, like, you know, you're getting an email back from MODOK. It's like, any time after 1 works for me, that's totally fine.
And then Dr. Doom's like, wait a minute, is that Eastern time or Latvian time? It just gets really difficult, but so regardless, it was a really cool way to kick off that crossover. And,
I have a ritual execution at 2. Is there any way?
And MODOK, I just love MODOK, High Evolutionary. Oh God. Anyway, so and I think one of them was Mojo, but I'm not quite sure because it looks kind of like him, but not exactly like him.
Is High Evolutionary a monkey?
No, High Evolutionary is a big dude with a helmet.
Is there?
He has monkeys. He has monkeys under him, though.
Is there a DC character that's something like that? He's a gorilla.
Gorilla Grodd.
Yeah, but there's other ones. There's like smart monkeys.
Yeah, the brain. Yeah, the brain ape or something.
Oh yeah, Mansoor Masfala or not.
And also in Savage Dragon, there was a monkey with Hitler's brain attached to it for a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so it was a lot of fun, and you know, and like I said, my review on iFanboy.com, if you had a chance to read it, you know, this isn't a jumping on point, this isn't accessible unless you're an X-Men fan, you know, but like, that's okay. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying last week, is that with all of this gray area, Captain America versus Iron Man and heroes and blah blah, like, I just want some old fashioned villainy. And some old-fashioned super.
Yeah, but now you're getting the villains helping Beast, so you're still getting that gray area.
Yeah, which is kind of... Yeah, yeah, but that's only for...
I bet that it turns around and they betray him.
Oh, yeah.
Someone may have an ulterior motive.
I think one of these villains in the upper left-hand corner is the Vulture, but I'm not sure.
He doesn't have video conferencing.
I know, exactly. I love these. He's that old crusty dude. Anyway,
I don't know how to work this mouse. What's going on?
But anyway, for $3.99, it was a thick, thick book, and it took a while to read, and there was a lot going on, and it was just fun. And as an X-Men fan, it was, you know, like, I'm just like, okay, cool, this is gonna be a fun summer. So I was very excited for it. And you know, as the only one reading it, I doubt there's anything you guys can add to it.
So is there a kickoff to this? Like, is this going through all this storyline in X-Men 200 is just going through X-Men, or is it going through the other books?
I think that this is just an X-Men 200, and then the Endangered Species is going throughout the other books, because I think Uncanny X-Men's got this whole other storyline with Storm and Nightcrawler and...
They weren't there. It was just...
They were not there, yeah, correct.
Astonishing, yeah. X-Men and X-Men.
Yeah, although I doubt this is taking place in Astonishing.
No. Yeah. Well, that's a year behind.
But yeah, basically...
You'll see part two in a year.
But basically it's the Astonishing X-Men and X-Men 200 kind of together, and it ends with them fighting the Marauders, which was awesome. So
alrighty.
I'm sure that was very good for you.
But now the book that came in a very close second to being the pick of the week was Green Lantern Sinestro Corps special number one.
Whole time reading this book, I was like, corp. Damn.
So you guys all got it?
Yes.
Quite by accident, but yes.
So thank you, Connor. In a word, awesome.
Awesome.
Like
one of the best books in months.
Yeah, like really, really good.
Yeah. Exciting, like, dramatic.
It was
the whole time. It was like one big, well done action movie.
Yeah, totally. Oh, it was great. Josh?
I thought it was pretty good. To me, no, and I think it was a really good sort of classic style of comic book. It's what the kind of thing that Geoff Johns really does well. To that end, I find that Geoff Johns' sort of style is a little traditional for the kinds of things that I like. But I understand why everybody liked it. I enjoyed it, reading it a lot. I thought, I just thought it was very classic and very traditional. So,
traditional, you know, like, a sniper battle in space.
I know, but that just seems like high concept action stuff to me.
Right, that's not traditional though.
Like what non-traditional? Like what do you mean by traditional?
I mean it's straightforward space superhero Green Lantern stuff. I mean, it wasn't anything like. Like, it was just like, I don't know, it was just traditional. There was nothing sort of new or revolutionary about it. It was just really well done.
I'd say this is very, very new in terms of superhero stuff. This is.
I mean, I thought the anticipation and the, like, not knowing what's going on and like the beginning with all those yellow rings shooting out and when you travel with the Green Lanterns and as they understand what's happening, mm-hmm. as they start realizing kind of what's happening, and then just the rallying of Sinestro and all his corpse or whatever they are, I wouldn't even think whether it's traditional or non-traditional. I mean, it was just
this is my
just,
take on it. I'm just trying to
put that filter over it because I didn't think about it that way.
I think it's just that in the past few weeks, I've been reading a lot of books. Some of the stuff we're going to talk about later that sort of is just completely other kinds of books, not superhero books, personal stories, and just other kinds of things. And I think that's more where my mindset has been at. So for this is like, this is a really good DC superhero comic.
Right.
It's not bad at all. That's what most people who are reading superhero comics are looking for. Just like whatever my particular, you know, like the stuff that I've been liking lately is not like this. So.
Oh, I see. So you're saying you're better than this?
No, don't.
Kidding.
No, I know
what you mean. I mean, it very much is. I mean, honestly, I mean, Green Lantern, the return of Hal Jordan, everybody says was great and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I almost like I'm more excited about this than I was about that.
Here's the thing though. Like, how come this has to be the big deal? How come Green Lantern can't be this good all the time?
I think this is going into Green Lantern.
There's no Sinestro book. This is going to lead through the Green Lantern books.
All right. I thought there was going to be a Sinestro Corps book. Am I wrong? Or was that just
this is a special. It just continues in Green Lantern 4021.
That's good. I thought there was going to be a new title.
No. But I do have your point. Like, why did this have to be a special? Why couldn't this just be an issue of Green Lantern?
Yeah.
Although it is thick. It's 48 pages.
I know, but so then make it two issues. Yeah. I mean, that last Green Lantern arc was like two issues too long.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
about Kyle turning evil?
I don't like it because I like the character, but I like it because that's good. I'm supposed to not. You know what I mean?
I liked how it went to his old original costume. I thought that was a nice thing.
Yeah, I mean, it basically affected me. In the sense that I really like that character, and so I don't want that to happen. In the same way that people really like Bart and they didn't want him to die.
Right,
you know, of course I don't like it. It's a great character, and they're gonna wreck him. He's dead, by the way.
Who, Kyle?
He's not making it through this. DC's cleaning house.
You don't think so?
Think about it. They're killing off all the clones and all the extra copies of everybody. You know, Bart goes down, Superboy goes down. You know, the Kyles. Too many Green Lanterns in town. We gotta thin it out.
Jason Todd.
Jason Todd, who's still alive.
Well, Connor, what do you think?
And they're doing with Donna Troy and traveling through the multiverse, and there's going to be a Jason Todd, Kyle Rayner, Donna Troy love triangle for further down the road. So this, he's got their plans for him, unless they're completely lying about everything.
Well, they could be lying about everything. I mean, look what they did with the Flash. They solicited Flash 1450.
Although they just had Dan DiDio explain that Phil Jimenez teaser image, and he went through all the characters and explained what it all meant, and he said that's what was the line for just for Kyle and Jason Todd and Donna Troy. So
that's cool. I like that though, but it doesn't mean that he can't die at the end of it. I mean, I could see it going both ways. I mean, I hope they don't kill him because I like the character. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway. But it was just awesome. It was very, very cool.
See, the thing is, I don't want to know that he's going to survive it, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you want to have it be questionable. Yeah. So.
Well, the new strategy is to disinformation, so he may not survive it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did like about this a lot is that, I mean, you guys both know that like the art was spectacular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He really like brought it, and I think that one of the reasons that you can't do this in a monthly book is I think that. My guess is he spent extra time with this. You know what I mean? Like making every cultivating page, just really good. The other thing I thought was that you can pick this up. Anybody can pick this up, and everything was really well explained and not in a tiring expository way. This is a fantastic jumping on point if you were just like, what's going on? You know, all the history's there, all the explanations. It's just, you know, good place to start.
Well, just really quickly to explain to people what happened, Sinestro is, you know, the main Hal Jordan villain. He's the fallen Green Lantern who's evil. He's got his own evil yellow Green Lantern ring, and he decides enough is enough and forms his own Green Lantern, Sinestro Corps, and to fight the Green Lanterns. And he basically takes the most badass guys in the universe who are on a cosmic level, puts them together. He takes an Anti-Monitor and Superboy Prime and Cyborg Superman and turns Kyle Rayner evil by infecting with the Parallax alien. And Sinestro, Kyle Rayner, Superboy Prime, Cyborg Superman, and Anti-Monitor is about as formidable a team as you could possibly imagine villains being. So that was one of the great things about it, was at the end you were like, holy shit, that's bad.
Talk about raising the stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all and the Sinestro cores are all based on fear, like the yellow, you know, ability to instill fear.
I really like that theme. I think that one of the things that I give John's credit for is that he's been really good in this stuff in taking those themes and just pounding the hell out of them. Like, this is the idea. It's fear versus, you know, order,
willpower,
willpower, and just like the overall concepts of this are so clear. That it makes for a very nice sort of simple story underneath everything that's going on.
But he does it in a way that's not. I agree that he pounds the theme through, but he not in a way that's obvious, like what Jeff Loeb's doing with the Fallen Sunlock.
Right, exactly.
Whereas it's a billboard saying what the theme is. You know, like it's done elegantly. So.
So I'm thinking that Van Sciver, he should be pretty up there, as far as the pantheon of superhero artists goes. Like, I can't think of a guy who's sort of more ably filling sort of the spot that, like, a George Perez was filling.
He needs to put out more work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
I agree with that. I mean, like, what was the thing he did before this?
Green Lantern, wasn't it?
What, 2 years ago?
I don't know. I might get him mixed up with Ivan Reese as well.
Yeah.
Very similar styles.
Yeah. Isn't Ivan Reese on Green Lantern currently?
I think he's a regular artist, and then Daniel Acuna was the fill-in guy.
Yeah, Van Sciver hasn't done at least anything I've read in a while. He's slower.
It's good, though, but he needs to put out more.
I love the Green Lanterns hanging out scenes, like when they're in the cafeteria. that's something they've put into this book where they, you know, you see them back at home base. It's just sort of like all the politics in the cafeteria. It's kind of like high school where the table that hates Hal Jordan, and there's, you know, the table that likes him, and then there's the refugees and...
I mean, if you're a Green Lantern fan, this is a really good time, because I think between, you know, the Return of Hal Jordan and then the Green Lantern Corps book that's been going on, and then now this series, I mean, they're really doing a lot with the Green Lantern character and that Green Lantern sub-universe world. So if you're a big GL fan, this is like, you know, you're sitting pretty.
So are you guys going to continue through the story? It goes through not just Green Lantern, but also the Green Lantern Corps book, which I don't think any of us buy.
Yeah, no, I'm in.
Probably? you know, I'm going to read the next one. You know, a lot of stories start off really good. Comics have this habit of starting off really good and then, you know, like a big build-up, and then it kind of sucks. But I have been surprised lately, and I think DC has been kicking butt in these kind of things. So, sure. But you got to earn my love.
Well, if you wanted to keep up with it, where could you go to keep up with it?
Well, you could go to a couple of comic shops in New York City, and they're our new sponsor, Jim Hanley's Universe, which is one of America's biggest, best, and most progressive comic book stores. The Universe offers the best selection of comic titles and related merchandise. From mainstream to manga and minis, Jim Hanley's Universe has it all. If you're in New York City, you can come visit them where art and literature meet. They've got a couple of stores. One is right in Midtown, across from the Empire State Building, and then the other is on Staten Island at 325 New Dorp Lane, and you can go to their website at www.jhuniverse.com, and you could also go and friend them on MySpace, which is myspace.com/Jim Hanley's Universe. And if you go into the store and it's because we said something, you should say, "Hey, iFanboy sent me here."
Yeah, we love the Jim Hanleys.
Yes, so. They've been very good to us. As you've seen, we shoot a lot there.
So okay, cool. So Connor, how was your stack of books this week?
Well, after Sinestro, everything was kind of middling. There's the Brubaker trifecta this week of Criminal number 7, Iron Fist number 6, and Daredevil number 98. And
now, do they try to make them all come out in the same week and just kill me?
That happens a lot. I remember all of Vaughn's books used to come out in the same week, and that happens with Bendis a lot, too.
Bendis a lot, yeah. But when you write that many books, it's kind of hard not to.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I don't know if they do or not, because I would think that's stupid, because you don't want to have like all the Ultimate books come out in the same week, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
But I think these were done to varying degrees of quality. Quite easily the best one was Criminal number 7. Iron Fist, I thought, was by and far the least enjoyable book of the run. And Daredevil, I'm trying to decide if I'm starting to get bored with it or not. I can't figure it out. It's just not wowing me like it used to.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Bold words. I know.
So you're hating on the Brubaker books.
No, not at all. Not at all.
You're hating. You're hating. I hear it in your voice.
I think Criminal is continuing to be one of the best books on the market. And it's the simple crime story, and it's great. It's the characterizations are awesome. The Sean Phillips art is just incredible, and I love this book.
Let me ask you a question.
From the covers to everything in it.
Who's the letterer on this book?
Elliot. On Criminal?
Yeah.
I think Phillips.
It's not, yeah, I think so. Yeah. I was trying to figure out if it was Eliopoulos or who it was, because it looks a little...
No, Eliopoulos is on Daredevil.
Yeah, and apparently, like, all it says is Brubaker and Sean Phillips, colors by Val Staples. So, like, you know, Phillips is doing the work here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's pretty amazing, which probably explains the little hiatus they had. I really dug this, and one of the things that I'm reading through it that I'm noticing is that he does conversations. A lot of this book is just talking heads, really. You've got this thing I'm noticing how he sets it up is that he'll have pages just full of panels, and each panel is a different face, which is saying a different part of the conversation and back and forth. And it has this really – it has a sort of a different flow to it than like how a Bendis conversation goes, where he has all these interlapping word balloons and stuff. So something to think about is – look at the craft of how he does a page.
Yeah, I noticed that now that you say that. It's really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fascinating.
It gives it a pacing that's consistent the whole book through, and it feels like a movie because that's how a movie works.
Oh, yeah. I love the – do you guys read the backup stuff at all?
Yeah.
Yes, but not right away usually.
Stephen Grant, huh?
Well, I don't mean that. I meant the note that Brubaker writes at the end of the book.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Saying how Sean Phillips hates to draw cars.
Yeah.
He's really good at it.
And build.
Yeah, that car looked great.
Cars and buildings, and I was like, rough issue.
Rough for a guy who draws realistic comics.
Well, this was a fantastic car chase.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, that's what I mean. The opening car chase was great.
Yeah. I mean, this was a great – this felt like a 70s movie.
Yeah. Steve McQueen should be playing this guy, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And we had, you know, the continuing development of this little universe. We see Leo didn't die in the last story arc. He's just in prison.
Unless this took place before.
No, because I don't think he'd ever been in jail. I think the whole thing was that he always ran. He never got caught.
That's right.
Yeah. And they mentioned that he got shot a couple times, but, you know, like, they mentioned it. They referred to it. So this takes place after the last arc, which, you know, for me as a continuity nut, I love that shit. But Yeah, I thought this was great. I mean, I thought Criminal was top of its game, continuing.
Daredevil.
Yeah, I loved this. I thought it was great. I as soon as you said it, Connor, that you were kind of getting kind of tired of it. That was when I was like, oh yeah, I could see that. But like from him jumping out of the cop car, which how did he kick off a car door?
He's wicked strong.
Well, look, when I say I'm bored with it, I don't mean at all to imply the art, because the art is fantastic. Yeah. So let's not talk about the art.
The art is fantastic, but even the story, I mean, the idea, like him running to save what's her face, the wife, and that one panel where he's kind of quickly thinking about all of his loves, you know, like what happens to them.
From the cliffhanger from last month, there wasn't much of a payoff. And I think that the problem he's having, the same problem he had in the last arc, which is it's probably one or two issues too long.
Yeah, I can see that.
It was like a lot of filler.
I did get to the beginning of this, and I opened it up, and it was like part 4 of 5, and I was like, oh, come on.
Right. Well, if you look at it, I mean, like, we're on issue 98, part 5 is 99, and then they have the big 100th issue.
Yeah.
So.
But it looks that sometimes you probably do have to space it like that.
But it looks like ultimately this whole Gladiator thing was a distraction towards the bigger play, which is kind of like a resetting of the status quo and basically making Hell's Kitchen a big crime area again.
Which I thought was the subtle important thing. Yeah. I'm looking at this issue and I'm looking at how he draws the city, and I really appreciated this time. Like he's got Hell's Kitchen down. Yeah. I think after listening to the Around Comics guys did a show on Frank Miller, and they said something about how Frank Miller would go out on the rooftops of Hell's Kitchen and like how he set that up. I'm looking at the city in the background of this book, and it's such a great part of the book that you don't even notice because you're kind of not supposed to, but like the water towers and it just looks like that area of the city, and it looks dirty and filthy even though now yuppies live there.
Right, yeah. So I don't know. I'm curious to see what it's going to go. I mean, that one page where with the drug dealers talking about the stuff and making the deliveries all over the kitchen, and then the big guy saying, "I know the boss is there," and you know what Murdoch don't know that this is just the beginning. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be this is setting up for the next bunch of arcs, which I think is going to be good. So
sure, that's good. But the problem is getting there is the problem. It's
right.
Like,
yeah,
you know.
I understand. So what about Iron Fist, which is the end of book one, as they refer to it?
Well, I stand in contrast with Connor. I really enjoyed this issue. I had a lot of fun with it. I was reading this, and all I could think of was, like, this to me feels like it would be a really fun kung fu action movie.
Yeah.
It was a huge fight, and, like, the standoff. And, at the end, it sort of fizzled away because, the fight didn't happen, but now it set it up for a bigger fight that's going to happen back in Kunlun. To me, I really enjoyed it. Like, it was just a big kung fu fight. There was bits of it that were cheesy. I can absolutely, understand that. I thought some of the Heroes for Hire stuff was a little silly, because it was just a little silly. Just felt like it was like, let's act like Tarantino for a couple of minutes. And then, of course, Tarantino was just acting like the movies that Heroes for Hire was based on in the first place, so who knows how that works. I don't know. I had a lot of fun, but one of the deals that I really, really – this David Aja.
He's fantastic.
He's awesome.
Yep.
I mean, he's really, really the way that he draws the two Iron Fists, they both have different type bodies. They both have they have a different bearing on them. They're not just superhero dudes. That was really impressive to me, like how Danny Rand is much more lithe and slim.
Yep.
I don't know.
Well, he's younger, but
no,
yeah,
but,
so,
it,
but yeah, no,
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 but a lot
but
of
I
just saw the same body type in all the heroes.
Yeah. You can definitely tell the difference between the two guys, even though they're wearing practically the same clothes.
Right, whereas Orson's like a bruiser.
Yeah, totally.
I really liked that.
Another case of two artists. They're doing the flashbacks with the classic artists. We get Russ Heath this time around.
Yeah, well, they've been doing that the whole time.
Right, yeah, no, but I think, again, on the theme we were talking about earlier about how using multiple artists, I think this is a good way to do it where you have different, sections done, which is kind of which has been done by Captain America before.
Coming out of this, David Aja is not, like, one of the big names, like, I'll be surprised.
Well, I think he's, when you say come as one of the big names, I think he'll be one of the big names the same way that, like, Alex Maleev is now and stuff like that, where he, is definitely respected and definitely big, but not, like, he's not going to be on Batman or Superman or X-Men.
You're saying in a world where Michael Turner is considered to be the big moneymaker. It's not going to be so much.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this. I had fun with this issue.
Yeah. So, Connor, you didn't really like it that much?
My problem with it is the same problem I've had for the whole series. Is I don't really care about all the mystical kung fu stuff. All the different orders and the different people.
Yeah, you got to really buy into that if you're gonna read the book.
See, for me, that stuff's fun. I mean, that's just like kung fu movie stuff. I had a lot of fun with the, you know, I have the best kung fu, and that's what a kung fu movie is. So, I mean, if you're not into that, then you're not going to be into it. But
it's less the backstory between all these different people. I don't care about all these different.
You just want to see Danny Rand kick ass, or?
Yeah, I like him better as a superhero. You know, I want to
like a street level fighting guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rest of the stuff, but I'll buy it as long as David Aja draws it. So, whatever. Right.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Cool.
Well, I like that part. So there.
All right. So, and if you after reading Iron Fist, you're in the mood for a kung fu movie, you could always head over to Netflix.com and rent one. How about that? So, if you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, you can sign up for Netflix if you haven't yet, where they've got over 75,000 titles, no late fees, free shipping. It's the thing where you go online, you pick the movies you want, and they'll mail them to you. You mail them back after you watch them, keep them for as long as you want. It's fantastic. And they got the rate plans starting from $4.99 and up, and you get a 2-free-week trial when you go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy. So, so what else we got there?
The last book I wanted to talk about this week is one that neither of you guys are reading, but it was appropriate because we did a show about it. The Boys number 8 came out this week as well, and for me, this has been the most sort of well-written issue of the bunch, and it's the first time that I've seen any of that heart that we've been talking about that a lot of his other stuff has had. Basically, the storyline is going on that there was a superhero, I can't even remember if he was killed or not. There was a boy who was killed, and they're trying to see if a superhero was implicated in it, but the boy who was killed was gay, and the superhero who may have been implicated was also gay. And there's this conversation that goes on about how Butcher, you know, who's the main badass character in it, like, at the beginning, he's using a bunch of, we'll say derogative terms.
Right.
Poof. Bender, such and such, and then Huey's like, you don't have to talk like that. But then as it goes on, it turns out that Huey's actually uncomfortable around gay people, where Butcher's not. And so they go on and they have this conversation about what Butcher's really like, and it has to do with the idea behind the words as opposed to what you actually mean or how you actually feel about somebody. And it, you know, it's one point of view on that whole thing, and it's not necessarily the correct one, but at least it was like a little. It was an exploration of it, and it was just – it had some different sides to it, and it makes you think, and it was enjoyable. And the thing about this issue was there wasn't really anything in it that was like – you know, there was nothing over-the-top violency for shock value in it. There wasn't – that didn't happen in this one. It was a lot of talking and character exploration and things like that, which I enjoyed. And I also think that the Robertson pencils in this one – are really tight, and he's, you know, you can tell, he's one of those things where we talk about, you can tell people love working on something, and he does a lot. There's a few typos.
Nice.
The folks over at Dynamite, a couple of typos.
Well, I mean, they're probably rushing to get them out and stuff like that. I'm not surprised. But so if you're reading The Boys and if you haven't seen it yet, as Josh mentioned, if you head over to ifanboy.com or go to revision3.com/ifanboy, you can see last week's episode of ifanboy, the video podcast, which featured interviews with Derek Robertson and Garth Ennis talking about The Boys as well as their other work. So, and for those curious, Derek Robertson is not me. I am not Derek Robertson. So, we are two different people, although we've never been in the same room at the same time.
That's true. You weren't at that interview for some strange.
Yeah, I was busy at that night. So,
Derek Thompson was like a big fake mustache. Ultimate X-Men 83 was plumbing the depths of art, I thought.
It was painful.
Woohoo! I dropped it. I didn't pick it up.
It was
the story was fine. The story was okay.
Yeah, the story. Just, the problem is the art is totally distracting from the story. That's when you can have passable art that doesn't necessarily prevent you from enjoying the story. But this is the kind of art that took completely out of the story because it was you look at some panels and go, what the hell am I looking at?
What upsets me is that like I don't know this Pascal Alex who's the penciler. I don't know if he's trying to. mimic the art from the last arc that we love. Then I forget that artist's name, and I really should remember it. Remember the last story arc where we're like, the art is fantastic. Yeah. Remember?
Ben something. Yeah.
Yeah. Oliver.
Oliver. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they said do that, and he's trying to mimic it. Or
I don't know. I just.
Because it seemed like related to it, but it's just not good. I mean, there was one panel when Rogue like grabs Iceman in the beginning, and like the facial expression on Rogue, I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, it was not.
It's just bad.
It's detracting from the story. I also wanted to mention quickly that the Teen Titans had a similar problem with the art. It's almost the same kind of badness. The same facial expressions were all strange, and the faces looked flat and all weirdly shaped and is bad. I also want to mention that I've dropped Thunderbolts. I'm done.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I dropped that 2 issues back.
Did you buy this week's issue?
Yeah. Upon reading
it, was it Speedball banging his head into the wall that did it for you, or
it was just all boring and stupid, and I don't care about the story anymore or the characters, and it's not going anywhere. It seems like, and I just don't care anymore.
Wow. This is a big week of dropping and buying and liking and hating.
I've been enjoying Ultimate X-Men. Like, it wasn't even that it was bad. I just wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't have nothing for the X-Men.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah. It's been fun without the art, but that's, I can see that happening. So. All right.
Cool. So normally about this time we go through and do the emails and the voicemails, but we decided to change things up, right, Connor?
Yes. I answered for him.
Yes. We always say we're going to talk about trades on the podcast, and then time constraints usually has cut the trades to talk out, so we decided to forego emails and voicemails this week and just do trade talk. The emails and voicemails will be back next week. So we've got a whole bunch of trades we're going to talk about now.
Ooh, cool. So let's dive right in.
Yes. Josh, you've found a new love, haven't you?
Yeah, I think my favorite new book of all time might be Fear Agent. All right, that's probably a bit strong.
did you pick up the first issue from Dark Horse, or this is just off the reading the trades?
No, this is actually, I had picked up the first issue from the Dark Horse thing after hearing you talk about it and hearing somebody else talk about it. Maybe it was some other podcast. And I actually had been interested in it, but I didn't know where a good jumping on point. And I heard that first Dark Horse one was a good one because it's like a flashback. And I read it, and it had Tony Moore on it, which is always – Tony Moore is very quickly turning into one of my favorite artists. Like, he does great books. He's just consistently hooking up with guys who are doing fantastic creator-owned books. I don't know how he does that. But then after that, I happened to be in a hotel room in North Carolina with a copy of the first trade via you guys. And I read through that, and it was just so much fun. It's just like this constant run and gun danger, you know, big robots and brain gooey aliens, and you know, just, it was fun.
It's a big 50s sci-fi story on steroids.
It's really, really possible to do that badly and boringly, but he doesn't, and I don't know what that was.
Well, Rick Remender on the writing.
Right, and I don't know what the X factor is that he puts into it, but I really like. I think to read that pitch, I don't think I would have liked it, but I did.
Right, and it's not like you never knew it existed. I mean, like I remember Connor read it like a year
ago. I've had his trade for a while, yeah, like a year.
Yeah, you were early to the game on it, and honestly, and not that I dismissed it or I wasn't into it or you know didn't like the pitch or whatever. I just never got it, and then I borrowed Connor's trade after my you know summer of trying new books, and Connor's like, oh, I have the first trade from Image on that. And I said, oh, cool, let me check it out, and I read it too, and I was hooked too. I thought it was great. I thought he does that sci-fi kind of big action story, kind of cool. It was just great. It was it's really, really good. And now this the series on Dark Horse is supposed to be more of a kind of war story kind of thing with a little bit of a sci-fi undertone to it. But,
and it is, and I really liked that. And I think having read the two together, you don't need the one for the other, but the context of it made it a little more interesting.
Yeah.
So it was really – it was one of those things where like every time they turn the corner, some other shit goes wrong.
Yeah.
And that's
big, and it's usually a big bug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they get covered in something gross, and he has to be drunk all the time. It's a little bit like – it's almost – you know, it's one of those anti-hero things. Like if you'd write an anti-hero really well, like the guy who's continually abusing himself and trying not to get involved in stuff, or, you know, like
Han Solo. It's the Han Solo syndrome.
Yeah, him, or like even Spider Jerusalem or something like that, where he just, you know, acts like he doesn't care, but, you know, yeah, kind of does. I'm not even far enough along with it to say I know the characters all that well, but because I've read the first trade and I read that one issue, but I haven't read the second trade.
Right. So, yeah, but we all love Fear Agent here.
And yeah, again, Tony Moore's stuff on that has just been great.
So, and then keeping on the Rick Remender theme, we all recently discovered Strange Girl.
Yes.
Yeah, we should mention and thank the people on iFanboy, the listeners who sent have been plugging Strange Girl, and one of them actually sent us a couple of the trades to read because we hadn't bought them ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thank you very much.
However, I didn't know about that, and I bought the first one.
Did you?
Nice.
Yes, I bought the first one. I didn't know that you were getting it.
Oh, Darren sent us the first one.
But
yeah,
then Darren sent me the second one, so.
Okay. Cool. So so I just finished reading this in this past week, actually, the first and the second one, because you guys had read it first, and actually I think Josh summarily dismissed it, telling me that I shouldn't even bother because I won't like it.
I really didn't think you would.
And I fucking loved it.
Okay,
it
but I want this to be clear. I said that after reading the first trade. Okay. And I didn't love the first trade. I didn't really like it that much, and I wasn't going to keep reading it. And had we not had the second one sent to us, this conversation would be over.
True. But
that so being said, when I got the second one, I really enjoyed it a lot more.
Yeah. So to give people the background who might not know about it, Rick Remender on writing, and then who's on pencils? I forget the guy's name.
Eric Nguyen.
Gwyn.
Yeah, N-G-U, that name. But yeah, the concept is that in the first issue, the rapture happens, which for those of you who aren't familiar with the rapture, it's the idea that God turns to Earth and says, okay, everybody who's, you know, worthy, come up to heaven, and we're going to abandon Earth to hell. And so that happens, and one girl doesn't
get it. So
that happened. And so one girl watched her whole family ascend to heaven, and she gets stuck on Earth. And then it flash forwards to 10 years later, where she's a slave of a demon in San Francisco as a bartender. And she gets wind of the fact that there might be a portal to get into heaven. So she and her little demon buddy steal a car and escape San Francisco and go to find it.
And while living with said demon, she's sort of a favored pet, as it were. And she learned a lot of magic and stuff. So that's like her thing.
So she's got some powers and stuff like that. And shit goes down, and it's this post, not even apocalyptic, post-rapture world filled with, you know, the demons of hell and humans who didn't get accepted to heaven just trying to get by and survive. And it's just, I loved it. It was great, you know, and, you know, it was a lot of fun to read, and something not, I mean, I don't even like, you know, we've talked a lot about Rick Remender doing genre work and stuff like that. And I don't even know what genre this fits into. You know, I mean, fantasy, maybe? I mean, I don't even know, but like, and, you know, and generally not being very religious, I'm not really reading into a lot of the possible commentary on Christianity or Catholicism or whatever, so I'm just like, okay, cool, the rapture happened, okay, I'm with it, I'm rolling with it.
I think that was one of the reasons that I didn't like the first one so much, was that I felt like there was a lot of commentary. I thought it was like a running commentary on how the main character, Reed, the author, felt about Christianity.
My problem with the first one was I liked the story. The art's not really my thing. It just doesn't connect with me for some reason, which is hard. So it's hard to get into the story when the art doesn't connect with you. But also, Little Demon Buddy, I just had enough of.
Oh, I loved him. By the end of the second book, I don't want to spoil it, but by the second book, I was all about him. I thought he was great. I just loved his dialogue. I loved everything about him.
Yeah, I hate the
character design a little bit. The two big horns coming out of his eyes were kind of like right above his eyes were kind of distraction. Mm-hmm. And I can see what you're saying about the art. The art is a very kind of sketchy animation style.
He's a video game artist.
Yeah. Yeah. So I can see why the art being a bit of a challenge, but I don't know. It wasn't that much for me.
It's very kinetic.
But I enjoyed the overall story, though. So that was good.
And you haven't read the second one yet, right?
No, I have it here. I have to read it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's good. I'll be curious what you think, Connor, of the demon guy at the end of that.
I mean, basically, I was right with Connor at the end of the first trade. And then the second trade, I don't know. I came around somehow. I really enjoyed it a lot more. I don't know why. Yeah. Maybe it's even in contrast to having read Fear Agent in between them. Like, I don't know if I'm just impressed by the fact that he did two such disparate styles.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, and sometimes that impresses me more and makes me like something. I don't really know.
I see in the second trade there's two other artists on it.
Yeah, there's a they finish the main arc, there's another story, and then there's a backup or some sort of
yeah.
So it's
Jerome O'Penna and Harper Jayton.
Yeah, they do the stuff towards the end of the book. So yeah, so cool. So Strange Girl was very good. And Strange Girl, it was published by Image Comics, in case you wanted to go find it and check it out. And so another book that was gotten a lot of discussion, I think, on the forums and on the site over the past couple of months that people were yelling at us saying that we should be reading was Hellboy by Mike Mignola.
Yes. We got a lot of shit for that, for not having read
Now, in defense of it, I've read Hellboy over time. I've just never collected, or yes. I've never been a, you know, because the thing is, it's had sporadic schedules, you know, like it's come and gone, all that kind of stuff. But I saw the movie in the theater when it came out, and I've always kind of kept it in, you know, the corner of my mind, but I've never really kind of dedicated toward it. So
I read Hellboy when the first minis came out back, you know, way back. I have them somewhere, and I remember that. We got Hellboy Seed of Destruction here, which is what we're talking about for Mike Mignola. And
well, that's what you guys read. I didn't actually read that one recently. I read the Hand of Doom.
Right.
And
John Byrne wrote this one. But I remember reading this when it first came out in trade. I have read them. I just haven't read them recently, and I don't know why, because on rereading this, I remember how much I enjoyed it, and I should probably start picking the trades up again.
Yeah, and I picked up borrowed a trade of BPRD, and my wondering about Guy Davis's art, whether I'd like it, was true, and that I really like it a lot. So I mean, the Hellboy universe has grown to a nice little universe where there's a lot of stuff in there, and if you're into kind of, you know, mythology and because it's steeped in mythology. Every story has got some connection to some real world thing that has happened or has gone on throughout history in terms of not only mythology but the occult and stuff like that. But with that slightly, I don't know how to even describe it, slightly Hellboyish factor to it. You know.
Right. Yeah.
So, Josh, what did you think?
Well, you know, like I had been the one who had said, I don't know, I'm just not interested in it. Because I was like, I don't want to read a horror book or whatever. And I didn't love the movie. I didn't think it was bad. I just didn't care for whatever reason. But I was reading the first book, and this is like, I kept getting the caveat from people that would say, well, the first book's all right, but you know, it's not really good. I can love that first book.
Yeah.
I kept coming in. Nice. I was coming into work, and I'm looking at Connor. I go, this is great. Have you read this? You know, and it's funny because people were saying, because John Byrne was hired to do the script on that first one, that it was a bit overwritten, and I mean maybe I could see, but I didn't mind it.
It's well done. It's well written.
It was really well done. The art is stunning. I mean, like, it's just, it's such a unique style. It doesn't look like anything else, and I just found myself, I enjoyed reading that first book more than I enjoyed the movie by far.
Yeah. He's the modern master.
Yeah.
Who, Mignola?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think he's really, really good. I've enjoyed his art. I remember when he was back at Marvel in the early 90s before he broke off and started doing Hellboy full-time. And I remember reading some of the stuff he did at Marvel and even some of the stuff he did at DC. And I was always intrigued by his art style. Mm-hmm. And I think the general superhero kind of world is not the best place for it. And I think something like what he's doing with Hellboy is.
I don't know. He did a fantastic Cosmic Odyssey miniseries with all the big DC guns fighting Darkseid. And it was fantastic. It was perfect for the new gods, you know, like Darkseid.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Yeah. Yeah. But so yeah, I don't know. I'm a fan, but I'm a casual fan.
I spent the whole Heroes Con looking for more trades of it. And there weren't any.
Well, too bad. Yeah, it was published by Marvel.
Yeah, no, I know. So in San Diego, I'm going to definitely look for some good deals on some Hellboy trades from the past.
Oh, yeah. I'm back in it now after having read this. I'm like, oh, yeah, I used to really like this. I'm going to start buying it again.
It was really good.
Yeah.
So success from the Hellboy fans.
So pay attention.
Yeah.
So Strange Girl, actually, Hellboy, there you go. The fans have spoken.
And if you wanted to pick up any of those, you can go to comichold.com. And that's where you can find discounted comics and trades and that sort of thing. And they got Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, Image, and they're 40% off. They got a great selection of trades. So if you go to comichold.com, you can check them out. And if you want to check out Hellboy, go for it. So
it's time for more personal works, I think.
Yeah, I think as we wrap this up, there's one book that I just recently finished a mere couple of days ago, and I know Josh finished a couple of weeks ago. I don't think, Connor, you had a chance to read it yet.
It hasn't made its way to me yet.
But it's called Fun Home by, was it Alison Bechdel?
Yep, that's it.
Yep. I don't have it handy and right in front of me. This was a little off the beaten path. This was a Times Book of the Year, I believe it was. Like, overall, not even just graphic novel, just, like, Book of the Year.
Mm-hmm. New York Times?
And it's, yeah, no, not Time Magazine.
Oh, Time.
I would check that fact, but.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, there's a quote from Time on the cover, but it doesn't say, it says national bestseller.
Yeah, but it's a personal graphic novel story about kind of growing up and coming of age and dealing with family kind of trauma. I guess it's dubbed a family tragicomic.
Yeah, that's pretty appropriate.
Yeah.
It's funny because right before I have a little story. Right before I was about to read this book, I ended up in a car with somebody who had been doing some business with my wife. And she said, I heard you know about comics. I said, yes. She goes, have you read Fun Home? I said, well, it's actually on my night table. I'm about to read it. She goes, I was her roommate in college. And then she proceeded to tell me the whole story of the book right before I read it. And I was nice. Like, oh, thank you. But it, you know what? It didn't ruin it because it's not that type of story. Everything sort of – they say what the deal is in the very beginning. It's hard to explain because it's almost like it's not really a narrative as much as it is a personal – examination of this of the author's relationship with her father, right, and how that related to them both growing up and their sexuality, and really well done, but it's like not something that can be explained easily.
Yeah, I mean the bullet points are is that is the author is a lesbian, and the event that the book is all built around is the passing of her father, who she finds out things about him in his past that she didn't know about. I don't want to give it all away.
Yeah.
I think this is something that people should go and read.
The cartooning in this is like exemplary.
Yeah.
Like every like the pages, the cartooning is so strong and so evocative. Like she has a style that's her style. It's not anybody else's, but it tells the story amazingly. You know who every single character is. The facial expressions say what they need to. All of that passive aggressive stuff that happens in people's eyes.
Yeah. It is a masterpiece, and I just pulled it up now, and it was named Time Magazine's Best Book of 2006, described as the unlikeliest literary success of 2006, and a masterpiece about two people living in the same house but in different worlds, which I think is sums it up completely.
One of the other things to keep in mind about it is that when they say a literary achievement, like there are like parallels and references to Proust in this.
Yeah, well, because her father's an English teacher, right. So like, it's very steeped in literary tradition.
It's not an easy, quick read. It's not light, and I don't mean that in a bad way. But there's depth to it and weight and you know, obviously, if Time Magazine likes it, then it probably
it must be good then.
No, but it probably wasn't fluffy.
Yeah, no, and we're admittedly a little late to the game, and you know because this came out in 2006, and now here we are halfway through 2007. But hey, you know,
this is
when we got there. So
when do the demons show up?
They do not. Oh. Well, the inner demons show up very early on in the book.
They're pretty much there the whole time. This is really one of those great books, though. If you've ever wondered what kind of books you can give to people who would dismiss comics. You know, like
yes, and it's actually funny you say that because after I finished reading it, I went into work and I said to a friend of mine who does not read comics, is not into this world at all, and I said, hey, I finished a great book and I think you should check it out. And she's like, oh, what is it? And so I started explaining it to her, and she's like, right, but it's a comic book. And I was like, well, no, it's a graphic novel. I mean, it's told visually through drawings, and I sent her the Amazon link to preview the pages. I'm like, but what you think of a comic book, this is not it. And she was like, okay, cool, I'll check it out, I'll give it a shot. So, yeah, so, I mean, this is the kind of thing where you could help promote the visual storytelling method, mm-hmm. you know, because it's not – there are no capes, there's no blasto rays, there are no – I mean, it's emotion, and it gets you.
It flies against all of the stereotypes of what comics are.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's comics.
It's published by Houghton Mifflin, so in case you want to check that out. So
book publisher.
Yes, indeed. So, all right, cool. So what else we got up?
Get the Homeless Channel from Matt Siliday from AIT Planet Lair.
Matt
Siliday. It's he writes and draws it, and it is his first work.
And talk about, you know, in the theme of critical acclaim, I recently saw it in Entertainment Weekly, got an A-.
Really?
Yeah. So good on you. That was awesome.
Somebody likes Brian Michael Bendis's early work.
Well, the elevator pitch on the book is that it's a book about a girl who sets out to start a television channel dedicated to a reality programming around homeless people, and in an effort to bring awareness of the problem of homelessness in the world. And it's kind of a book with a lot of social commentary and social, like, feelings of social responsibility. Matt wrote and did the art, and the art, like Josh said, references Bendis' early work because it's photo referenced, I believe.
Yeah, but look, like, it's drawn over.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even just mean the art, but, like, I really felt like the style of the art and the dialogue, the way that all that stuff worked together, felt. And I don't want to make it sound like I'm dismissing it because I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it worked. It worked amazingly well.
Yeah, and you know, I thought it worked really well. The thing is that you know, it's his first book, so it's not without flaws or you know, like there are a couple of things that I thought the story moved very rapidly.
I thought it was a little thin.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it moved very quickly where there were some kind of gaps where I would have liked to have seen more of what was going on, but I can understand why it didn't. Because originally he was self-publishing this, and then AIT Planet Lar put it out, so I could see where that kind of would get in the way of planning the story. It's one thing when you're planning on doing it yourself, another thing when you know how many pages to work towards and stuff like that. So I thought that there was some, you know, maybe refinement of the story that could have happened. But like you said, I mean, like, I thought the art and the storytelling was perfect and was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed reading it, so...
It was really good. I thought it was a great first effort. I think, you know, I'll definitely look forward to the next thing he puts out. But, you know, overall, I thought it could have had a little more depth to it. But it was good. It was good. You know, the art was great. He's made himself one of his main characters. And
yeah, that was kind of funny.
but when you're good. When you're really good, really good first time effort. Good job.
Yeah. So very cool.
I actually loved this book. Like, I didn't really know what to expect from it. I loved it. It was one of those things that every once in a while I read a book that I think, oh, crap, I wish I had done this. And I think this was one of those books because it was a story that didn't have to be told in comic book form, but it was. You know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't follow any of the comic book tropes. It wasn't anything like that. I just read through it like, damn, I wish I had done this myself because that's – and I don't – you know, again, I'm not taking away from him, but like sometimes something is sort of obvious and easy. It doesn't mean it's not good. Right. You know what I mean? It's just the story's there and he went and he told it and it's an original story. There's nothing I can compare it to. You know, it had snappy dialogue.
Very much in the theme of Fun Home, where it's not a typical comic book, and it's a story being told in the visual storytelling method, and you know, it's very current, very, like I said, you know, like socially aware was the word that I kept on coming up with it, where it's almost, you know, it's not, you know, kind of similar to Strange Girl, and whether you want to theorize whether Remender is giving his views on religion, you wonder if Matt's giving his views on politics and this, and you know, and so. But it was great. I thoroughly liked it. So
yeah.
So check that out. AIT Planet Lar is the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And I think we got one more.
The last book I wanted to talk about was a book that I had picked up in Charlotte from Top Shelf Comics. It's The King by Rich Kozlowski, and I will give credit. I heard about this actually when I was on Around Comics from Tom Caters. He'd read it. This was a book that I was like finished reading. I read it in one sitting, and I was so excited, like I couldn't wait to tell people about it because I thought it was that good. It was, again, in the same theme of this is a story that I've never read in comics or anywhere. You know, like it's just a unique story. Basically, the story is in Las Vegas, a guy calling himself the King has shown up and he's playing shows. He's playing Elvis shows and he's ostensibly an Elvis impersonator. But people say that he looks and sounds exactly like Elvis Presley. He always wears, but you know, like if he had never died, but he always wears a mask and a helmet and you can't see his face. And it's a story of a journalist who was summoned by the King specifically to come do the story on him. And the journalist is trying to figure out if he, trying to figure out what the story is behind it. Is this guy really Elvis? Is he not Elvis? Is he, you know, what's the story behind it? And just the idea of the whole thing is that people want to believe that Elvis was alive, and it has to do with faith and all sorts of stuff. It goes deeper than just Elvis. But as you read this, you want to believe it. Now, whether it's true or not, you find out, you know, what happens. And that's sort of the grip of the story. It's all
Don't
done.
Don't say it.
I'm not. I wouldn't. I wouldn't even.
Yeah, because I totally want to read this.
I called my wife. I was like, you have to read this as soon as I get home. Yeah. It was that good. This is one of the best graphic novels I've read in a really long time. The cartooning it's very cartoony. It's sort of everything's over exaggerated. I can't think of what to compare it to, but it's you know, classic sort of cartooning. It's not realistic, but it's realistic enough that it tells the story. It's all done in blue scale.
Like Fun Home was.
Yes.
Yeah, Fun Home's blue scale as well. Yeah. Yep.
It's actually a little more. Yeah, it's a little less. Fun Home's a little more washed out. This has a little more. It doesn't. I mean, it doesn't matter. But it's a little. It's so good.
Cool. Excellent. Well, awesome. So that's from Top Shelf.
That's from Top Shelf. It's highly recommended. Great story.
Awesome. Cool. So, excellent. So we hope you all enjoyed our little sojourn into the world of trades and graphic novels and stuff like that. We're going to try to do this more and more as we've all got stacks and stacks of books to read to get through. So, but I think that about wraps it up for this week. Don't forget to head over to ifanboy.com and check out all the discussion there. We're talking about this week's comics as well as other graphic novels and stuff like that. So go to ifanboy.com and see what's going on there.
You can email us, contact@ifanboy.com, or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. We're going to have the voicemails and the emails back next week, so, you know, don't fret.
Send them in.
Then maybe you've noticed that we do a video show every Wednesday around 3 o'clock Eastern Time. The new video show is posted to go along with your new comics. This past week we got to talk to Garth Ennis and Derek Robertson, which was totally fun. And this week coming up, Wednesday is the 4th of July, isn't it?
It is.
In the United States, yes.
No, it's the 4th of July everywhere.
It is the 4th of July everywhere.
It's the 5th.
I wasn't implying.
It's a holiday here in America.
Here in the U.S., you got to celebrate that.
Yeah.
And so we do, sort of. Yeah. Yes.
You'll see.
Yeah. It's a traditional American holiday, I would say.
Yes. Yeah, we killed some British people.
Wow. That's weird.
What? Who said that?
Anyway. Yeah.
So that's this week. In the meantime, you can go to the Frapper map at frapper.com/ifanboy, FRAPPR. You can stick your pin in the map, and you can represent where you're from anywhere in the world. You can go to frapper.com/ifanboy, or you can go to the link in the upper right-hand corner of ifanboy.com.
Yes, and if you like to be online, and you want to you want to go to the various different websites, you can find us at myspace.com/ifanboy, comicspace.com/ifanboy. Go to Facebook, search for ifanboy. You can find us there, verb.com/ifanboy. Or you can go to Podcast Alley or Podcast Pickle, or if you're in iTunes, go on iTunes and give us a vote or a review. And we're also on Dig in their podcasting section, which is very cool. You should go and give us a dig if you can. And finally, if you're still online and you're not tired from clicking and all that kind of stuff and you like what we do and you want to see more of it, you can head over to ifanboy.com/donations and you can donate to us if you so feel generous.
You can just send us iPhones.
Yeah, no iPhones.
Just send them.
And if you're a fan of the show, if you're a fan of what we do, this summer's going to be a fun summer. We're making our San Diego plans, so if you're heading to San Diego, stay tuned. More information will be forthcoming in the next upcoming couple of weeks. So.
Well, hope so, because it's only 3 weeks away.
Eek! Shit! We got to get working.
Yeah.
Oh. So, all right, cool. So I'm going to go get to work on our San Diego plans. All right, until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
I'm Connor.
And none of us got iPhones.
Can you imagine that, like, in the conference call, like, they all sit around on the video chats, and MODOK's like, oh, it's so hot in here. And Doom's like, it is hot. And then they all start complaining.
And then Arnim Zola's like, did you get this iPhone? It's amazing.